This podcast is sponsored by Runway, air traffic control for your mobile releases. Put your releases on autopilot. Runway will shepherd your release from kickoff to submission to release with no manual intervention. A single source of truth for your releases. Runway integrates with your favorite tools for a bird's eye view over release progress and blockers. Make your releases collaborative. Get a rich, contextualized release runbook that makes capturing responsibilities and tracking tasks crystal clear. Get more control on your releases on App Store and Play Store. Point your browser to runway.team. Thank you for sponsoring my podcast. I'm also revamping my newsletter. Check it out, appforce1.net to sign up. You can also find a sign-up link on my Twitter profile. Hi, and welcome to the 19th episode of my podcast. My name is Jeroen Leenerts and I've been developing software for over 18 years, developing iOS apps for over 9 years, and I'm running the Dutch CoCats for over 7 years. If you're an iOS app developer, you should listen to my podcast because it will keep you updated on interesting articles, conferences, and events you might not have heard about otherwise. In this episode, I'm going to talk about using compositional collection view layouts in iOS 13, a deep dive into CF run loop, URL session configuration quick guide, phantom types in Swift, deflaking CI test with XC results, option set in Swift, coaching for free, an update on Sam's progress finding an iOS development job, and Donnie's Monday morning tweet. It's a busy week actually. I have 6 recordings planned this week. Nadim, Alan, Sam, Charlie, Jeremy and Marleen will all be recorded this week. It's now again late at night here in the Netherlands and I'm recording the 19th episode, but I'm having a lot of fun actually today. While I'm working, my daughter is off from school. It's a holiday week this week and I must say the vibe is completely different at home. There's no pressure, no homeschooling, just a few kids having fun and enjoying themselves and doing fun leisurely activities the entire day. And of course my wife has been supporting them and me these days. The home remodeling, as I might have told already, has been postponed by 2 weeks. So really counting down here, arranging all the stuff, choosing some materials and just getting ready for the complete mayhem that will be starting for a duration of 6 weeks. And otherwise, it's just, keeping busy, doing a lot of great stuff at my job today. I was actually working on ripping out an entire network stack today and replacing it with a new one. Something magically actually happened last week. My daughter actually got home from school and she was tired at the end of the day. How nice is that? So changing up her work at school with the help of the teachers seems to have worked out for 1 week now. So let's hope they can keep at it and that my daughter actually starts enjoying school more. But I also want to get into my bed at a reasonable hour, so let's dive in. Donnie Walls has a nice write-up on compositional collection view layouts in iOS 13, and I must say it's a nice contrast to what Filip Nemecek has done. What I like about Donnie's article is that he goes into a bit more detail on using a grid-like layout in your UI collection view and why and how you can actually achieve this, and how you can, with basic building blocks, create a layout that actually looks quite dynamic. So definitely have a look at this article by Donnie and also have a look back at the articles by Filip Nemecek and see how these articles stack up against each other. Sue actually has a very interesting article on CF run loops. It's called Dive into CF Run Loop. A run loop is part of the fundamental infrastructure associated with threads. A run loop is an event processing loop that you use to schedule work and coordinate the receipt of incoming events. The purpose of a run loop is to keep your thread busy when there is work to do and put your thread to sleep when there is none. A CF run loop monitors sources of input to a task and dispatches control when they become ready for processing. So basically, it's one of the core building blocks of iOS and Mac apps, and knowing what a run loop is within the iOS and Mac ecosystem is actually very helpful to come to grips with how threading and eventing and scheduling of work is actually done on a device. So have a look at this article. It's quite a long article, but it's really, really good. Keith Harrison over at Use Your Loaf has an overview of the URL session configuration. If you are relying on URL session configuration for your network request, you might want to check out his articles to see what the defaults of a URL session configuration are and allow you to decide whether or not those are right for your application. What Keith does is actually go over URL session and its configuration and see what the default settings are and what the implications are for your code. Majid has a nice write-up on phantom types in Swift. A phantom type is a generic type that is declared but never used inside the type where it is declared. It is usually used as a generic constraint to build a more type-safe and robust API. In this article, Majid actually takes a look at what phantom types are and shows some convenient examples of why you would actually want to use a phantom type. So have a read of this article and improve your code tomorrow. Andy talks about option sets in Swift. Like its name implies, an option set gives you a group of options. These options are predefined, and when you use them in your code, you cannot choose any other option than the set that has been given. Apple is actually using option sets throughout their APIs, and it's actually quite interesting to actually work with these. In this article, Andy describes what option sets are and how you can use them and how you can create them. Very convenient and a very important language feature of Swift. Over at PSPDFKit, they have a lot of experience with running their code through a CI setup. One of the challenges you will run into when running continuous integration is that your tests can become flaky. In this article by Matej Bukovinski, they actually explain how they do their CI testing and how they can actually try and detect flaky CI tests and how you can actually deflake those CI tests. The biggest challenge is always with having a stable local reproduction on your developer machine so that you can actually see the problem in action. In this article, they describe a number of tools and techniques that you can use to actually have a solid reproduction on your local machine so that you can actually try and have a better chance of debugging these issues. Earlier today, I had a coaching session with Sam again, and what now follows is somewhat of a recap of everything that we talked about. And it is a general update on the status of Sam's search for a job. So, hi Sam, how is your day today?
It's going pretty well.
Cool, yeah. I heard you did your first like real tech interview recently. And in general, how did that go?
I would say it went really well. Not in that I think from my perspective, I think, I did a pretty good job in the interview, but that's not why I say it went really well. I say that because it was a really good learning experience.
So what were the biggest things that you could take away from this first experience?
Probably the first biggest takeaway was, I learned, what to do or how to respond if you don't know the answer to a question, or if you don't know quite how to answer it. If you have an idea, you can definitely still attempt to answer the question and try to go about it logically and kind of analyze it and try to break it down into smaller parts and approach it that way. And if you simply just don't know the answer, you can describe how you would go about solving it from a point of no knowledge.
Okay. And were you nervous beforehand, or?
I was a little nervous, but I was frankly more nervous before my first interview. And I learned from my first interview, which wasn't technical, that every interview is just more experience. And that helped me kind of change my mindset. And coming into this interview, it just better prepared me. And it felt more like just a conversation.
Yeah.
That's how it felt.
So the people that were doing the interview, did you see any of them in the first interview as well? Or
yes, it was the same people. So were...
Yeah, that really helps.
Yeah, that did help. It was the same two people.
So would you say that in hindsight, it was an enjoyable experience, even though there was, of course, some pressure?
I would say it was enjoyable overall. There was a few points where I probably had a few beads of sweat going. I was like, oh crap, what do I do now? But in hindsight, I mean, although it wasn't enjoyable in the moment, looking back, the entire thing was enjoyable because I learned so much, and I'm ready to apply what I learned going forward.
Okay. And anything that you would do different if you had another shot at the same conversation?
I mean, there's a lot of things I would do differently. It was my first one, so it was a really good gauge to see where I'm at right now, as from a technical standpoint, my technical skill level, and also just my ability to explain my understanding of concepts. It was really useful.
So you mentioned that in the interview that you had, that you, in hindsight, that you can still work a bit on, despite that you're able to keep your composure, be able to have like a better response in the situations that you don't know the actual answer from the top of your head, or that you actually have to spend some effort to actually come up with an answer to the questions that's being asked. So what is the biggest challenge that you then run into when you get this question that you don't know the answer to?
I would say the biggest challenge is maintaining that composure that you would hold well in general to questions that you do know the answer to, because the first thought that comes to your mind is like, oh no.
Yeah.
So
am I sweating?
Yeah. Am I sweating? And then it all like, and the attention's on you, of course. So it's just taking a deep breath, and, yeah, if you need to take a step back and, just take a moment to think and, analyze it and come up with your own answer.
But you do say that probably this actually happened during the second interview that you had. So what did you do in this case when the question was asked that you did not know the answer to? What was your response and what was your behavior in that moment?
In that moment, I looked away for a second and I thought hard to see if I, you know, did have anything floating around my brain, which I didn't.
Okay.
And after that, I was like, okay, maybe I can find an answer practically. I had a code base open. So I started typing a line of code, to see if I could find, the specific, function to do with auto layout that they were asking about.
Yeah.
And, although I was able to find it later, I couldn't find it in the moment because
it's always hard, like in the heat of the moment, to actually type the right thing and have this moment of inspiration to actually come up with a good answer.
Exactly.
But what could you have done differently in a situation that you get a question that you don't know the answer to? What are the options that you have available in that situation? Of course, you can stay quiet, think about it, which is a perfectly fine behavior. And what are other things that you could have done, like in that moment, to like either give yourself some more time or to actually get some more information from the person doing the questioning?
So I could have asked for more clarification around the question, or asked for a specific example or something that would have better helped my understanding. But in this case, I knew exactly what they were asking for. I just didn't know the specific answer, from a Swift perspective. It was like a very specific, kind of syntax question. So right when they asked me the question, I think I could have articulated that I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then maybe I could have articulated, I'm still going to attempt to answer based on my knowledge that I do have and based on, logical deduction. And then, what I did do after, you know, I realized I didn't know, and then I tried to find the answer in a practical way, and I still couldn't find it. I then articulated that I then like went to the last option, and I said I don't know, and I explained what I would do if I came across this situation when working on a project, and how I would find an answer. So I think I did an okay doing that, but that was like my last resort. Maybe I could have done that first.
So after the interview, how long did it take you to actually figure out the correct answer afterwards?
Like 5 seconds.
It's annoying, huh?
Yeah, but that's life. It's I wasn't like angry with myself or anything that I couldn't find the answer. But it was sort of eye-opening to, you know, the kinds of things that could happen during an interview. And I know, I mean, I learned from that situation about how I could answer better next time.
Cool. Well, we'll make sure to like keep ourselves updated with Sam's progress, and definitely keep an eye on his Twitter handle, Sam Code with a double M in the middle, just to make it easy. And when there are new developments, I'll make sure to retweet it, and we'll definitely have Sam back on my podcast in the future, just to stay up to date. And of course, I will keep on coaching Sam, because the snippets in this episode are actually just a few minutes of like almost an hour long conversation that we had today. So Sam, keep us updated, okay?
Of course.
Of course, it's Monday, or at least it was Monday. I'm wrapping up my recording and it's already past midnight. But here's an overview of what people are actually working on according to their responses to Donny Walsh's tweet. Filip Nemecek is planning on launching an API for iOS feeds. Marco is learning on how to deploy a Vapor app with a database to Google Cloud using Docker for a new side project. The developer is so busy this week, he's unable to learn new things, working for 13 plus hours every day this week. He's implementing notification handle in one of his projects, and he's probably going to be fixing some bugs too. Don't burn yourself out, man. Christian Kozarowski is actually creating a new beta build of his side project radio app, Ether. He added iTunes API support for artwork and easy radio station search with Radio Browser. Stuart Lynch has actually released the 100th Swift-related video today for a journey that started a year ago. Mahanas is dedicating the next couple of weeks to normal schoolwork, of course, but also to deep dive into data structures, advanced Swift, Swift standard library, and optimizing collections. Oh, and it seems she's also practicing basic GitHub usage. And Daniel James Tronka has released a major update in his full native Stack Overflow client. It's called Crew Stack. John Haney is getting better tester feedback on his new iOS app, and as he's working on the Mac version of the same app, and then the watch version, and then the Apple TV version. Peter Jakub is finally updating his website after months of delay. And Marco Engelman is releasing a new article about domain-driven design. So all in all, a lot of people are actually working on their own skills or publishing new content, here and there a new app or two. But it's really interesting to see that after the initial spur of just bringing out and creating new stuff, people are now actually more focused on gaining more knowledge and improving their development toolbox to actually be able to pick up the next challenge in the coming weeks. So keep it up, everybody. If you have any feedback, please at mention me on Twitter at AppForce1. Let me know what you think, and most of all, keep on working and keep on enjoying this great community. And I will talk to you next week. Lead Developer, best practices and tips for lead software developers. PDF, MOBI and EPUB format. AppForce1.net/lead developer. All one word.